ברוכים הנמצאים We are studying פרשת השבוע, פרשת שלח לך. I would like to say a few words לזכר נשמת former chief rabbi of Aleppo, Syria, Hacham Yom Tov Yedid HaLevi, Alav HaShalom. Some of you might remember that we lost our chief rabbi over the summer, in the beginning of July. And now we're reaching his 11 months. It is our custom that at 11 months, we say words of hesped, words of tribute, and musar, in order to memorialize the niftar. I find it very difficult to just pass over this 11th month and not recognize it in public. Such a man of great stature clearly deserves us to interrupt our normal program and say some words that not only can benefit the deceased, but of course can benefit the living. The Gemara is very strict on those that are lazy in paying tribute to tzaddikim. And the Gemara says that there was great repercussion when the Jewish people were a little lackadaisical in eulogizing Yehoshua ben Nun. I'm not too sure why they were lackadaisical. I'm sure it was for good reason, and I'm sure it's not the lackadaisical that you think it is. I'm sure they eulogized them quite properly. But nonetheless, there was a prosecution against the Jewish people that was aroused because they did not deliver enough words of inspiration, and they did not memorialize the tzaddik as should have been. So that forces me to, as I said, bypass the normal style of our parasha class and allows us to review some of the highlights and the strong points of Hachem Yom Tov Alav HaShalom. The pasuk that I chose actually comes from this week's parasha to be the theme of the talk. In our parasha, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu dispatches the spies in order to spy out the land of Israel. The Torah comes along and says, Ishehad, Ishehad, one representative from each tribe. Interestingly enough, the Jerusalem Talmud says that each one of the spies actually had somebody that traveled with him in order to escort him. The Yerushalmi learns from the pasuk, Ish Ehad, Ish Ehad, that every Ish Ehad had an Ish Ehad traveling with him. We would say like a security detail, or a somebody to carry the luggage. So really, when we say there were 12 spies, it's true. There were 12 spies plus an additional 12 helpers that traveled, altogether 24. And Moshe Rabbeinu clearly gives them instructions. Latur et Eretz Kena'an. Their job is to spy out the land. He tells them exactly the route that they should take. And then he says to them, amongst the other things that they have to look out for, see if the people are strong, are they weak, are they numerous, are they minimum. Check out the land, see the cities that they live in. Are they fortified with walls, or are they opened? And then he says, Umaha Ares, look at the actual topography of the land. Hashemenahi, is it fertile? Imraza, or is it lean? Hayesh ba'etz, does it have a tree? Im ayin. Vit hazaktem, and you should become strengthened, ukahtem mipiri ha'aretz, and you must take from the fruits. We want to see samples. Bring some of the fruits of Eretz Yisrael back home with you. Ukahtem mipiri ha'aretz, v'hayamin yemei bikurei anavim. And the Torah tells us the days that this expedition took place were the days where the grapes were ripening. It's still when the grapes were small and they began to ripen on the vine. This pasuk, the Gemara in Baba Batra, page 15, has a great question. I understand Moshe Rabbeinu is interested in knowing the fertility of the land. The Jewish people are farmers. It's an agrarian society. They're going to need to know exactly how the land reacts. They wanted to see samples of Peri Haaretz. It's fine also. But what does it mean when it says Hayesh Ba'etz? Does it have a tree? Now, if Moshe Rabbeinu was interested in asking, are there trees? So then it would have said Hayesh Ba'etzim in the plurality. But here the pasuk says Hayesh Ba'etz. Does it have a tree? What could it mean? What were they supposed to come back and say? Yes, we saw the tree. What did he mean, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he said Hayesh Ba'etz? So Rashi right away is bothered with that, and he paraphrases the Gemara that I just mentioned. Hayesh Ba'etz. It's not a tree. Im yesh bahem adam kasher, shiyagin alehem b'zchuto. The tree represents adam kasher. Is there a tzaddik living there? Because if there's a tzaddik living in Eretz Kana'an, he's going to protect them. His zechut is going to strengthen them. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu is asking not a physical question, but this is a spiritual question. See to it, go spy out to see if there's a tzaddik. Because as long as there's a tzaddik in the town is protected on his behalf. Yesh ba'etz. Etz is a euphemism for a tzaddik. And supposedly we're told that there was a tzaddik that was living in Eretz Yisrael at the time, Iyov. And Iyov, we know, was very righteous. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know, tell us the status of Iyov. If he's still alive, then the timing is off. We cannot conquer it yet. But if he has retired and expired, then we have a chance. So, Hayesh Ba'etz. Spy out the tzaddik status of the land. And Rashi's language. Because im yesh bahem adam kasher, shiyagen alehem b'zchuto. The tzaddik protects the country. Now even though this was a country of Gentiles, doesn't matter. If you have adam kasher, even in a country of Gentiles, the tzaddik protects. It's not the first time we've heard this concept. We've heard this concept in Parashat Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov ve'er shava vayelech harana. Yaakov Abinu leaves his father's house, which was in Be'er Sheva, and he goes to Haran. Right away the rabbis jump. Why doesn't the pasuk just say vayelech Yaakov leharan? If he's going to Haran, it means he must have left Be'er Sheva. Why does the pasuk have to tell me? He left his location and he went to another. Rashi right away jumps on this and says, to teach you, Shiyitziat Sadiq Minam Makom Osa Roshem. That when a Sadiq leaves a city, there is a void. It creates a void, an emptiness. And Rashi goes on to say, that so long as the tzaddik is in the town, who hadara, the tzaddik is the glory of the city, the splendor of the city, and the beauty of the city. However, panamisham, when the tzaddik leaves, panahoda, panaziva, panahadara, the glory and the splendor and the beauty leaves with it. So the pasuk is saying, it's not alone or enough that Yaakov went to Haran. Vayitzeh, when Yaakov left, the town was never the same. There was something that happened on his yitziah. Be'er Sheva would never be the same when Yaakov Abinu left it, because the tzaddik represents the protection of a city and the glory and the splendor and its beauty. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned. Maybe there's a tzaddik, and as long as there's a tzaddik in the town, the tzaddik will protect. There's a city, one of the oldest cities on earth. It's called Aleppo. In Arabic we call it Halab. In Hebrew we call it Aram Sova. Well, any of you that study the Tanakh, I'm sure you've come across the word Aram Sova many times. David HaMelech references it in his Tehillim many times. David HaMelech fought wars, and he actually annexed this city, Aram Sova, Aleppo, Halab, as part of Eretz Yisrael. Aleppo has a kedushah to it. It has sanctity to it. It is considered part of the conquest of King David. There are not too many cities in the world that can boast that level of kedushah, albeit outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's considered an annexation to Eretz Yisrael according to the Jewish law. It is not old, antique city that has the same flavor and atmosphere of the old city of Jerusalem or the old city of Sfat, with its windy, narrow cobblestone roads and its old walls. It is in that city that David HaMelech commissioned his general Yoav ben Tseruiah to build a synagogue. The synagogue on the name of Yoav ben Tseruiah. And it was built with great majestically, 7 columns. It's got to be one of the oldest synagogues existing in the world. It still exists. It has to be close to 3,000 years old. This is the city of Halab, and it's been existing from the times of David, and it always was a flourishing town. It was a town known for city of scholars, as Maimonides said when he visited Halab. He said it's a city of scholars, and it was a city of great commerce as well. If you would ask people before last year, where is Aleppo? Even candidates that were running for president could not identify or know what this is, this city called Aram Sova, Aleppo. They did not know. And there's no reason to it. Unless you come from that city, why would you know it? Why would you have any, you know, connection to it? Although now, almost every American who follows the news knows about this city. The city is in ruins today. The city is subject to great destruction. Tens of thousands of its buildings were razed to the ground in this last civil war. Tens of thousands of its inhabitants were exiled or murdered. The city is today an official hurban. It is destroyed. Do you think that it is a coincidence that the year and almost to the month, Aleppo had chief rabbis for 3,000 years. And after the passing of its last chief rabbi of 3,000 years, and at that moment the city becomes destroyed. This is a clear proof to me, what the tzaddikim say, what Rashi said, that as long as tzaddik is alive, he gives glory and splendor and beauty to a city, even though he moved to America. But that city was connected to its last rabbi. And once that last rabbi departed, the city had no more spiritual existence. They had no more connection to anything valuable, anything that was connected to Ruhaniyut. As one of the newspapers recently said about the city of Aleppo, even the stones reek with sadness. That means even the stones of Halab are crying today. There's nothing left. That's what a reporter recently wrote in the Los Angeles Times. And I don't believe that it's a coincidence that these events that are happening on the news, now they won't tell you that on CNN or Fox, they will not make that parallel or correlation between the spiritual death of a city and the physical death of a city. But I believe that it is quite obvious that anybody that is paying close attention, the rabbi of the city gives that city a hiyut. Just like Iyov gave the whole land of Canaan existence, and Moshe Rabbeinu was worried. If he's there, the city cannot crumble. But if he's not, if that etz is gone, then the city can be overtaken. And once that etz, that tree, named Chacham Yom Tov Yedid HaLevi Alav HaShalom, once that tree was uprooted, it was a very, very short while after that the city came down as well. Panaziva, Panahoda, Panahadara. But there was a rabbi called Hatam Sofer. Hatam Sofer asks the obvious question. Lama lo katuv Adam kasher? Why does the Torah compare the tzaddik to a tree? If Moshe Rabbeinu was interested to know that if there's a tzaddik in the city, he should have asked it to the point. Hayesh ba tzaddik? Hayesh ba Adam kasher? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu use an analogy? Is there a tree? And then we need to read Rashi, oh, a tree means Adam Kasher. Say, is there Adam Kasher? We know how to talk straight. What is the analogy? Why is the tzaddik compared to a tree? Oho. So, I'll tell you what the Atam Sofer says first. And then we could extrapolate. Atam Sofer says, a tree is different than a sun, or a moon, or a star. Now, even though the sun and the moon and the star are much more overwhelming than a tree, I don't care what tree you take. Take the greatest tree in the redwood forest. It's not as big as the smallest star. Oh, that's what the Hatam Sofer says. Very good. He says the property of a tree, however, is that it constantly is growing. A tree never stops its growth. It's always moving, it's always expanding its leaves and its branches and its fruits. As you know, the sun never changes its size. The moon as well, although it looks like to us when it waxes and wanes, but its size is never changing. Only our view of it changes. And a star doesn't become a bigger star or a smaller star. These, as dazzling as they are, these parts of creation, they are stagnant. But one of the parts of creation that is constantly in flux, it's constantly moving, it's constantly bettering itself, expanding itself, is a tree. As a matter of fact, from time to time, the city has to go and prune the trees because their leaves and their branches start to, expand out where it becomes hazardous to the wires and to the inhabitants. But only as they cut it, the tree, as in a vengeance, grows faster and more. The way you inspire a tree, you cut it and it grows more. That's pruning of the tree. So the tree is a symbol of constant growth. And that's only what you see above ground. Of course, if we look beneath the ground, there's a whole myriad of roots that are constantly spreading out. Maybe once you walked on the sidewalk and you saw the pavement is not straight, and you're wondering, who did this? Well, that's the underground of the tree. The roots that are spreading underneath go underneath the pavement and they cause it to move and to buckle. So Hatam Sofer says, that is what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is like a tree. A tzaddik is never stagnant in his spiritual growth. He always is moving to higher levels and more levels. He's never satisfied with his spiritual accomplishments. He never says, well, I've got my simicha, I've passed the test that gives me rabbinical ordination, and now I will coast or cruise for the rest of my life. Impossible. I've seen great tzaddikim on their deathbed. They had the books of the Mishnah on their hands, reading the words of the Mishnah, even though they were, you know, all hooked up with all sorts of tubes and things, just to keep them alive. The tzaddik is never satisfied. Well, if that's the case, then I think it is appropriate to refer to our rabbi, Hacham Yom Tov, as a tree. The Hacham never stopped developing his mind in Torah and expanding, increasing his Torah knowledge and flourishing. Our rabbi wrote many, many books. He wrote books on the entire Tanakh, the Torah, the Nevi'im, the Ketuvim, all of the books, books that most people don't even study and struggle to understand their words. And he wrote the most beautiful interpretations that any student be able to take it and learn it. That was his Tanakh career. But he had a career in the Talmud. It was well known that the rabbi was a master in the study of the Talmud, breaking down the intricacies of the hardest curriculum on earth, Talmud Bavli. And he had such an analytical way that he was able to break it down, and he constantly was... I learned Masechet Yevamot in yeshiva. One time I went to visit Hacham Yom Tov. He used to learn down the block in the Ezrat Nashim. I had to ask him a question. By then he was, must have been 70 years old, and he's up there in the Ezrat Nashim. He has his table there with his chair, and what does he have on the table? Masechet Yevamot. I'm a young guy in yeshiva learning Masechet Yevamot. And here's the chief rabbi, he must have learned Masechet Yevamot. Who knows how many times he's learning it. And he's learning it in depth. You see, his hand is holding the back of the book where all the commentary are as he's trying to break through one of the commentaries of the Tosafot. That means, not like today's student. That says, oh, I learned it already. You learned it already. You've exhausted the subject. You've learned it so well that you cannot review it. That you don't think you can reach higher levels. Our rabbi wrote books on many subjects of Torah that we don't have today. He studied Mishnah, but the most intricate Mishnayot that people don't study because it's too difficult. That's the subject of Taharot. It's the last section of the Mishnah that's very, very difficult to understand. And he wrote glosses on it to the end of his life. And now they're finding that there's many, many manuscripts that never were printed. It means he was writing to the end of his life. In Syria, he didn't do that. In Syria, he was a teacher and a chief rabbi. That was another area of his life. But when he came here, he left that vocation of teaching students like he did in Syria and being a rabbi. He became more private and worked on his own Torah. But he never stopped. And he had every excuse to say, listen, I did a great accomplishment in the old country. I did many students. He had a grueling schedule. From 3 o'clock in the morning, he used to wake up to teach students in the old country in order to prepare them that they could teach their students. And he would test them. It's an old, it's a system that doesn't exist today. So in that sense, I say our rabbi clearly was like a tree. But I'd like to say yet another comparison. Why the tzaddik is compared to an etz? And I base it on the story of Yonah that we read on Yom Kippur. If you remember, in the book of Yonah, at the end of the story, Yonah is walking, and it's a very, very hot day, and the sun comes down on Yonah, and is beating on him. And it's becoming dangerous. And all of a sudden, Yonah sees a kikayon. A kikayon is a type of tree. And Yonah seeks asylum under that kikayon, and the kikayon provides him shade temporarily in order to protect him from the sun. Well, when I was reminded of that story, I understand another property of a tree, besides the fact that it always is growing, Exactly. The tree provides shelter. It provides necessary shade from a burning sun. Well, what would the analogy be then to tzaddikim in our generation? Well, you must know the sun represents Esav. The moon represents Yisrael. As most of you know already, our calendar is a lunar calendar. We make a blessing on the moon every month. Our holidays are based on lunar calculations. However, the secular calendar is based on a solar calculation. 365 days in a year is based on the rotation of the earth around the sun. And there's reasons, not for today's discussion, why we're compared to the moon and they are compared to the sun. But the sun represents a foreign culture, an alien culture. That's what the sun is. That represents the culture of the Goyim, of the nations. It is not the culture of Torah. It is not the culture of a living God. It is a synthetic culture that they create in each country. And this is one of the great challenges of Jews. Because for most of our existence, we've been living in foreign lands. And the sun of that culture shines on us. And as a result, the Jews of that country absorb it. And unfortunately, if you start to look at some of the statistics in countries where the Jews have lived for hundreds of years, you start to see rates of assimilation. Maybe some will say that that has to be expected. One of the great benefits of a tzaddik, he is like a tree. He is a place of shade in order to protect his community from those foreign influences. He is a safeguard. He provides us a defense from a toxic atmosphere, from a culture that is not Torah, an imported culture. But the tzaddik stands like a guardian in order to protect his community from things that they might not feel are so poisonous or dangerous. What do we know? No, we're modern. We don't think that anything is so bad. But you need a great tzaddik who has a very good sense in order to say, this has no place in our community, and this has no place in authentic Judaism, and this has no place in Torah lifestyle. So in that sense, the tzaddik is like a tree, that he protects his community from the sun, from the bright lights of modernism, and the bright lights of newness and enlightenment that not always are bad, mind you, but the rays that are dangerous, the tzaddik who's like a tree is able to spread himself like the kikayon, so they don't come and chas v'shalom damage a community. Well, in that sense, I'd like to read you something from the introduction of the rabbi's Tehillim book. The rabbi wrote a Pirush on Tehillim. It's one of the many books that he wrote. It became a classic. It's written in Lashon HaKodesh. He was a very humble man. Because in the introduction, he doesn't talk at all about his own accomplishments, strangely enough. If he wanted to, he could have written, you know, he had a nice resume. But he doesn't. He decides to dedicate, I guess it's 1.5 pages, small letters, to his rabbi, Acham Moshe Tawil, alav shalom, who was the rabbi before him. And he talks about this rabbi with the greatest humility and reverence and total effacement. Now, if anybody knew Hakam Yom Tov Yadid, he was a man of great opinion and a man of great conviction. And to see him write like this, like a
I didn't want to say a word, like a pussycat, like a mouse. Such total effacement and humility in front of his rabbi. It's incredible to see. So I explained on the pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Hayesh ba'etz im ayin. Ayin always represents humility. Ayin is nothingness. That the tzaddik has to be two things. He has to be an etz, which is very tall, very, very fortified, constantly growing, constantly protecting his community, but at the same time he has to be ayin. Ayin is nothingness. Ayesh ba'etz im ayin. The tzaddik has to always go back between those two midot. Anyway, there he writes, Mi lo yodeya et asher asa Moshe Eved Hashem. He calls his rabbi Moshe Eved Hashem. Moshe, the servant of God. Is it not known what Moshe Eved Hashem did? Mi lo yizkor etev. Will you not remember? Kasher hafetza chevrat kol Yisrael haverim. He says there was a group. They called themselves kol Yisrael haverim. And they came into Syria. Lehashpia al yadei batei talmudei Torah. They came to try to change the curriculum in the yeshivas. They wanted to modernize it. Sa'ida Hassan, they wanted to get the youngsters. Lemshoch libam b'halaklakot, with a sharp, smooth tongue, they tried to attract the youth. La'azov et bet sefer Talmud Torah, to leave the yeshiva learning of the Talmud Torah, ulestapeach b'nachadatam, and to go to the new revised learning, which was secular. Lashkotam merosh, to give them, instead of the sweet waters, to give them the merosh, the bitter waters that they were providing. Unmaleh betnam, and to fill their stomachs, ashkelot merorot, with bitter sour grapes. Mi lo yizkor, who cannot remember? Asher hu haya yachid, he was almost the only one. Kim'at asher irgish, he sensed it, he felt it, the danger. Vehash la sakana, he felt the danger, merahefet, that was hovering over Syria. Umi'utedet lavo, he saw the future danger that can come, changing the yeshiva system of learning, introducing foreign curriculums into the Torah. Ubelev regesh, or ragash, with a emotional heart. Hit azer ka'ari, he girded himself like a lion. Ve'arach ma'arechet lemunam, and he waged a war against it. Val oyebav etgabar, and he was victorious, he prevailed. Without any false flattering to those that were influential, lo ehnif lahem, ubiyad hazaka nilham, velo natan yad lashpia, and he neutralized them, and they weren't able to influence a tradition of 3,000 years. Could you imagine? Veta'atsumotav, and his strength, amdulo, stood for him, lebatel atzatam ulhafir machshevotam. It broke their ideas and plots. So Chacham Yom Tov looks at his rabbi in the greatest praise. He dedicates a paragraph to what? That he was like a tree. The rabbi of this rabbi we're talking about, Chacham Moshe Tawil, that when he saw a breach in the wall, that somebody was coming to introduce something that was, I have to be careful, not necessarily new, but something that was dangerously new. New necessarily is not bad. Hiddushim are not necessarily bad. There are many ways to interpret. But when the Hakam sense that this is not just new, it's not an old new. An old new is okay. But a new is a problem. Now, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot that the Torah is like old wine in a new bottle. There's nothing wrong with a new bottle as long as it occupies old wine. We're concerned about new wine in a new bottle. So therefore, there's nothing wrong, as I said again, with the old new. But it seems Acham Moshe fought the
the Nunu. So our Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hayesh ba'etz, is there a tree? Is there a tzaddik in that land that is flourishing? Is there a tzaddik that will protect them from the sun? Im ayin, and who is humble? And then the Pasuk comes along and says, V'thazaktem. You have to strengthen yourself. Ulkahtem me'peri ha'aretz. The tzaddik, as was mentioned, when he leaves the world, he leaves a legacy. The real tzaddik, even after he passes away, he has set up already a system where his legacy can live beyond him. How is that accomplished? Very simply. First of all, by writing sefarim. So therefore the written word, teaching students and raising children in the way of Torah. In this way, even though the tzaddik is not here, but he has left perot, he has left fruit. Well, Hakam Yom Tov, Alav HaShalom, was an expert in the book of Iyov. It's a very hard book to explain. It was well known on Tisha B'Av. This is one of the books you were allowed to learn. Because it's a sad story. And for many years in Deal, in the summers, Hakam Yom Tov would spend the day teaching the book of Iyov. So I think it's appropriate to say a derash from this book. It's in Perek Yudalet Pasuk Zayin. The Pasuk says, Ki yesh la'etz tikva im yekaret ve'od yahalif ve'yonakto lo tehdal. It's talking about trees. Ki yesh la'etz tikva, there's hope for the tree. Im yekaret, if it's cut, ve'od yahalif, it'll continue to regenerate. V'yonakto lo tehdal. What is those last words? V'yonakto lo tehdal. There was a great rabbi called Rabbi Shimon Agassi. Rabbi Shimon Agassi wrote a sefer called Imre Shimon, and he writes that this is talking about the tzaddikim. Ki yesh la etz tikva, that there's hope for the tzaddik im yekaret, even if he gets cut, even if the tzaddik leaves this world, he's chopped down. Ve'od yahlif, he can regenerate. How? Ve'yonakto, those that he fed. A yonek is a baby that suckles from his mother. Yonakto, those that drew Torah and education and lessons from the tzaddik, well, lo tehdal, then the tzaddik doesn't end. So great is the tzaddik that even after he's in Shamayim, Yonakto lo tehdal, that system that he left in place of those that drew from his spiritual nourishment, lo tehdal, the tzaddik does not leave. Well, if that's the case, so then I say, the pasuk is hinting to our rabbi, v'thazaktem, even though the rabbi is not here, v'thazaktem, be strong, be fortified. You know why? Ulkahtem, because you may take mepiri haaretz. Now we all know that aretz is rashi tevot for aram tzova. Ulkahtem mepiri haaretz, that there are still those fruits of the aretz, of that land aram tzova. The Hakam left us his students, his wonderful children that are each one more remarkable than the next. That is our consolation, that there is still peri haaretz. There's peri, there's perot from Aram Sova that are still amongst us. However, the pasuk then says, "Vayamim yemei bekurei anavim," and the days were the days of the first fruit. I'd like to explain this as well. There is a reason why we need to continue our great legacy and tradition. You see, those that were fortunate to live in Syria at that time, they don't need too much strengthening because they had the rabbi. Those of us that benefited from the rabbi's teachings when he was here in America, so we're better off because of it. I'm not too concerned about the previous generation and our generation. But it is the children, the grandchildren of the next generation. The Bikuri Anavim. That's the concern. These little grapes that are just starting to ripen. Unfortunately, in the new generation, where everything that's old is considered passé and wrong, the God of this generation is technology and something that's new and something that is novel, and anything that's from the past is an antique and is considered stale and it's old and it's unfresh and it's clearly unappetizing and unappealing. To the new generation, it's science, it's intellectual knowledge from the academia, which is not always wrong, but when it runs against Torah thinking and tradition and what we've received as Mesorah, so if it's a choice between something that we have received from an old tradition or something that we received, you know, from a new view, the younger generation will always opt for the new and shun the old. And can we blame them in a generation that changes their phone 3 times a year in order to have an upgraded version? We cannot tolerate that something that is not the latest and something that is not the most current. And therefore, in such a generation of Bikurei Anavim, we struggle to try to bring these old teachings of our Torah, this unchanged tradition, this tradition that is for all time, but we compete against the new ideas, the new culture, the new atmosphere that exists. So therefore, more than ever in our society, we need to bring back these traditions. It's the generation of Bikurei Anavim that we're concerned about. And I will tell you, I'm not against our children learning higher education. That's not what I'm against. What I am against and what we should be concerned about is when higher education starts to bring our children away from the traditions of the Torah. That's what we should be concerned about. When the influence of college campuses and academia and books, secular books, start to creep in and start to change our way of viewing Torah, that's what I'm concerned about. But knowledge on its own sake? Of course, I don't think you can become a doctor unless you go to college. You cannot become a lawyer unless you go to college. You cannot become a professional. Or for that matter, you probably cannot do a lot of things unless you get some sort of education. I don't think anybody can argue with that today. But what we can be cautious of and wary is that when that education strips a student of his first allegiance to the Torah, when it starts to compromise values, or it starts to, worse, start to create a warpness of the values of our Torah, where we start to look at the Torah differently. And I've said it again, the Torah can be looked like a kaleidoscope. Many ways to look at the Torah, like a diamond, no matter how you turn it, it always looks different from different prisms. I'm not talking about looking at the Torah from different viewpoints. I'm talking about a distortion of its values. And you cannot blame the student. The student sometimes has been corrupted by certain values, and they try to take those values and to stick them in the Torah somehow, and to look at the Torah from a new view, not a new old view, or an old new view. And this is what we're concerned about, the Bikurei Anavim. There's a pasuk later on, not in this week's parasha, but in parashat Chukat. The pasuk over here is talking how the Jewish people traveled. They were traveling, making their way to Israel, and they passed the country of Edom. And they had asked Edom if they can travel through their country. I guess it was a shorter path for them. And Edom says, no, lo ta'avor. No trespassing. So then the Pasuk writes, Vayomeru elav b'nei Yisrael, the Jewish people tell the people of Edom, Bamsila na'ale, we'll just go in a straight path. Ve'im memecha nishte, and if we drink your waters, Ani u'miknai, me and my flock, ve'natati mechram, we'll pay for them. If you're worried about that, we're going to drink your waters, you'll be compensated. Rak en davar, beraglai e'evora. Please, we just want to go by foot. Nothing else. En davar, we have nothing else. No other request. Beraglai e'evora. We want to travel pedestrians by foot. There was a rabbi called Kedushat Zion, one of the early rabbis, previous rabbis of Babov dynasty. Kedushat Zion has a novel way of interpreting this pasuk. And he writes that this is talking about when the Jewish people encounter Edom. Edom represents the philosophy of Rome, the philosophy of Edom, which is the final exile that we're in, when we encounter their culture. So the pasuk says that the Jewish people are well aware, Ve'im memecha nishte, if we're going to drink those waters of that foreign culture, our Torah is also called water, Mayim Hayim. But the foreign waters are called Mayim Hara'im, the dirty waters. And we say it in the book, in the Torah, Ve'im memecha nishte, if we're going to drink those waters of that foreign ideology, Ani u'miknai, me and my children, we're going to pay a price. Not a monetary price. We're going to pay a price on our souls. And therefore the Jewish people come to the conclusion that we cannot bring in new. So that doesn't need any improvements. God writes the book once, He writes it correct for all ages. Lo yaharif ha'el ve'lo yamir, dato le'olamim lezulato. So we come back and say, Rak en davar. There's nothing we can take. However, beraglai e'evora. Raglai in this derasha means what I am ragil, what I am accustomed to. And you know what I am accustomed to? What my father taught me, what my grandfather taught me. Beraglai e'evora, b'masha ani ragil, in the hergel, what I was taught through a tradition, that's the only way I'll be able to navigate a modern society. Not by abandoning tradition. For the first new scientific theory that comes out, we abandon the Talmud and we run to embrace it until it's disproven, and then we embrace the new philosophy. Always at the expense of the Torah. And the traditionalist says, Rak beraglai e'evora. I will travel in what I was ragil. What did my rabbi say? What did my grand rabbi say? How did my teachers teach me? And therefore, if that's the case, Vayamim yemei bekurei anavim. In our generation where we have the youngsters that are lost, they're searching for the emet, for the truth. Well, it's not a phenomenon. The Gemara predicted it. The Gemara predicted at the end of time, the Mishnah and Sota, that at the end of time, ha'emet tihye ni'aderet. The truth is going to be hidden. There's only going to be a small pocket of truth, and it's going to be very difficult to find because the majority of the world will be engulfed in sheker, in falsehoods. Today you talk about false news. Forget about that. It's just the falsities of life. Sheker is the king today. And emet has to hide out in some corner. And you have to look very good in order to find emet. So the Mishnah predicted it. But there was one rabbi, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it was Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, Hashem Yimkom Damav, he explained it differently. Ha'imeti ni'adaret. Ni'adaret can mean hidden or concealed. Ni'adar. But he learned that the word ni'adaret comes from the Hebrew word eder. Eder is a group. Adarim. Flocks, groups. He said at the end of time, there's going to be many groups in Judaism, and each one is going to claim that they have the emet. The ha'emet yin'adaret is going to be divided into adarim. And every sect is going to say, this is the truth. Well, I guess if you ask, you know, some factions of Judaism, you know, that have veered off, they call themselves reformers, but if you ask them, they'll say, this is the emet. And if you ask those that, the quasi-reformers, the conservatives that they call themselves, they admit that they, you know, made some adjustments, but they'll say, this is today's emet. And then you have, now even in orthodoxy, different groups, and each one claims, the emet is with us. And if the emet is with us, that means everybody else that doesn't follow this emet, is sheker. Va'emeti yeni'adaret. And I say again, it's possible that you could have many forms of emet. I guess there's many ways you can get to a destination. You don't have to take one route. But there's certain routes that are wayward, that are off the map. So not everybody can claim the flag of emet. Ve'emeti yeni'adaret. And clearly when it runs against the 13 principles of Yahadut, so Hakam Yom Tov Alav Shalom served as that guardian. When you go to England, you see the guards standing in front of Buckingham Palace, and they have one job, to protect the Queen. Whether she's in Buckingham or not, that's not the point. The point is that they represent guards of something that is significant. Well, if we have guards to protect the Queen, the Torah is Bat Melech. The Torah is the princess. It's the daughter of God, Orachim HaKadosh says, Bat Melech. And with Bat Melech, you need guards to protect that nobody compromises it, nobody abuses it, nobody distorts it. And that's the value of Hachem Yom Tov, Alav HaShalom. He learned from rabbis that were guardians, and he himself made students and taught them how to stand guard against things that would, Chas v'Shalom, cause the Torah to become changed in a bad way. So therefore, the pasuk in our parasha is hinting it to us very clear. Hayesh ba'etz, Moshe Rabbeinu says, go see if the land has a tree, Adam kasher, im ayin, who's humble. And even if the tzaddik is not there, v'tazaktem, you can still be strengthened. V'lkahtem m'peri ha'aretz. Because the fruits of Aram Sova are still alive. These succulent, delicious fruits of Hachem Yom Tov still exist. And we need them more than ever. Because v'hayamim yemeh b'korei anavim. There's the days of the ripening of the fruits. The next generation needs this guidance. So it's true what Rabbi Agassi said. Although the etz is nichrat, but the yonakto lo tehdal, the yenika, those that have been yonek from this great tree, lo tehdal, it must never cease. That merit we pray that we'll be able to continue in our great rabbi's legacy, continue standing up for our Torah, protecting it, defending it, and following our traditions of halab, following our minhagim, following our mesorah, and that'll give us and our community, Bezat Hashem, many, many years of continued success and prosperity. Zichuto yagen aleinu, amen.